Welcome to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up this hour, we'll hear about some new protocols at one of the state's major health systems to screen for victims of sex trafficking. And SDPB's Charles McElray talks with the organizers of a new fund to help celebrate the state's 125th anniversary. But first, it's Wednesday and time for a weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. Joining us today is David Montgomery, political reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, where he also writes the Political Smokeout blog. And David, welcome back to the program.
Always good to be here.
Also with us on the line from Rapid City is Denise Ross, web editor of the Mitchell Daily Republic. And Denise, good to talk with you again as well.
Hey, thanks, Carl.
Well, the State Libertarian Party held its convention over the weekend and nominated candidates for constitutional offices. And David, I know that you were there. Was this for a Libertarian conference? Was this convention? Was this pretty interesting?
Yeah, it was. I mean, for one thing, it was the biggest convention since the Libertarian Party was founded back in the early 1990s. They also nominated the largest slate of candidates the Libertarian Party in South Dakota has ever nominated. And the elephant in the room, one of the candidates they nominated was Chad Haber, the husband of Annette Bosworth, who has occupied an outsized share of political attention over the past year or so and continues to do so.
Now, why is it that Chad Haber is running for Attorney General? It almost seems like it's just a platform to attack incumbent Republican Marty Jackley, or is there more going on there?
Well, I mean, why do you run against someone? Because you want to attack them. He says that he's running because he wants to beat Marty Jackley, because he thinks that that he's has abused his power and is corrupt and a range of other accusations there. Jackley, of course, is currently clashed with the Bosworth-Haber family. Bosworth is currently being prosecuted in election law violations by Jackley's office. She attacked Jackley during the campaign when he announced that he was investigating candidates, which was later confirmed to be Annette. Then there's even some more bad blood that goes back even further back to some investigations into potential Medicaid fraud with Bosworth's office that ended in a settlement. And that's been combined as the Bosworth people have looked into things. They've uncovered some other instances that they think show bad judgment on Jackley's part, and they've combined all that into a broader narrative that Jackley has to go, and Haber says he tried to find other attorneys running against Jackley, couldn't do it, and decided to run himself.
Oh, he hasn't been active as a Libertarian, has he?
No, he has not. He had been a Republican in the past, just registered as a Libertarian shortly, and it's possible that could get him in trouble. The Republicans may be considering filing a challenge to his eligibility. We'll see if that happens later today.
Well, Denise Ross, looking at the Libertarian Party in South Dakota, does it have much of a status in the state?
It's ebbed and flowed over the years. Probably the most memorable campaigns have been run by Bob Newland, who has been a longtime advocate, for the legalization of marijuana, for, more relaxed hemp laws. He's come up and testified before the legislature. He's just done all kinds of things over the years, and he's kind of used the platform as I believe he's run for Attorney General as a Libertarian in the past and used the platform to kind of promote that issue. Beyond that, I don't myself have a lot of memory of past notable Libertarian campaigns, so I think they definitely have an uphill battle, to get recognition and to get in the race.
Are the people, Denise, the Libertarians, are they united by certain principles, or is it in the case, like it seems with Chad Haber, that it's candidates who are looking for a party that they can run under?
David might be better positioned to answer that question since he actually got to go to their convention. The principles of the Libertarian Party are, as little government as possible, just the bare minimum to avoid anarchy. So they, in general, are for legalizing drugs and having, very minimal regulation, very minimal government activity. I think, maybe a military and some roads, and maybe that'd be about it. Mm-hmm. But as far as the candidates in South Dakota, I'm just not familiar enough with them to say you know, how much they are, by the book libertarians, or how much they are more opportunists looking for a platform to promote their own issues.
Well, David Montgomery, what did it seem like at the convention this past weekend?
Well, I mean, the libertarians have certain dominant issues as a party and a movement. Certainly, opposition to the war on drugs is a big one. That was actually one of the points of contention when Chad Haber ran against Kurt Evans for Attorney General and for the Libertarian nomination there. That Evans supports legalization of drugs, and Haber simply said that he would deprioritize enforcement of drug laws if he were elected. And there's a couple other issues, but I guess worth keeping in mind that several of the candidates that the Libertarians nominated are newcomers to the party. So it'll be interesting to see how that sorts out. I think one of the candidates they nominated was a complete mystery to almost everyone else in the room, but he was the one who stepped forward and put his name out, so he got the nomination.
And who was that?
A fellow named John English, running for, I shouldn't say off the top of my head, but let me get it here in a minute here, auditor, I believe.
I can't see it in my notes either here, but yeah. It's Commissioner of School and Public Lands.
That's right, Commissioner of School and Public Lands, yeah.
Well, looking at the constitutional offices that the Libertarians nominated, there's one for everyone. Democrats, on the other hand, failed to nominate people to run for Attorney General, State Auditor, and the School and Public Lands Commissioner. Denise Ross, is that embarrassing for state Democrats at all?
I think it probably is a little bit. It doesn't, you know, it speaks to the underlying problems that have plagued the party off and on for years, really. Their numbers in the legislature kind of peaked in the early 90s, and they've sort of been on the decline ever since. And you know, when they had elected members of Congress, that was sort of the lifeblood of the party in South Dakota. You had Tom Daschle, you had Tim Johnson, you had Stephanie Hirsa-Sandlin. Well, Daschle and Hirsa-Sandlin have been, you know, have lost elections, and Tim Johnson's about ready to retire, and a Republican, Mike Rounds, is favored to replace him. So you're looking at, you know, a probability of having an all-Republican congressional delegation plus Republicans dominating at the state level. And so I think that is an issue for the Democrats. If they can pull a rabbit out of their hat and keep that Senate seat, you know, I think that would be a saving grace for them. So, you know, I think there are some very significant issues for the Democrats to face.
Well, David, from your perspective, is this significant at all that Democrats failed to nominate anyone to run for those three offices?
Well, it's not good. There's no way around that. Especially since a couple of the offices were ones that the Democrats had said beforehand that they were going to target. The Public Lands Commissioner is an open seat, and those always hurt to give up the person running for it. Ryan Bruner is a first-time candidate, potentially vulnerable there. So that one particularly hurt, I think, for Democrats. But the Democrats would have been underdogs in all of those races. And then let's not forget, when comparing the parties, that Democrats did nominate people for Senate, House, and Governor, which the Libertarians didn't. And those are all significantly higher-profile races. I mean, it's not good for the Democrats. I think history will probably not look back on their failure to nominate these candidates as a significant moment, but it's a negative step on their party's continuing struggles.
Well, Denise Ross, in looking at the Democrats in order to build their strength, I know that there's a number of legislative races that I think are open as well. You know, for Democrats to build their strength, do they need to have candidates for every race?
Well, I think it just makes it's a matter of appearances. Even as David said, they would be underdogs. Just to be able to have the absence of a candidate, it just brings the question up.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering yesterday. I don't know if Denise or David, if you, I think it was the deadline to replace state legislative candidates who had withdrawn from, I think, a dozen or so races. Majority of them Democrats. Any of those any notices filed, David?
That's sort of unclear at this point. The candidate list was last updated at 4:30 p.m. Last night. The deadline was 5 o'clock. I'm still waiting to hear back from the Secretary of State's office and the Democratic Party about whether they have, in fact, submitted names for some of these races, or whether all of those withdrawn candidates are going to be dropouts and essentially conceding a number of races to the Republicans. There's 14 Democrats who've withdrawn, one of whom they've replaced.
Well, coming up next week at Dakota Fest in Mitchell, what I believe are the first debates of the season held in the U.S. House, Senate, and governor's race. And Denise Ross, do you think these debates will set the tone for the fall campaign, or has that tone already been set?
Well, I think that's sort of become the South Dakota tradition, is that those debates really kick off the campaign season in earnest. And they're always surprising. I mean, I think back to 2004, when John Thune came out, a completely different candidate than he had been 2 years earlier when he lost against Tim Johnson, and both barrels blazing against Tom Daschle, and kind of held that, you know, that spot where he was kind of setting the agenda for the campaign from that point forward. And of course, Daschle lost that race. Then you think back to Kristi Noem and Stephanie Hirsa-Sandlin, another rowdy, lively debate where there were, you know, Kristi Noem came out very strong and ended up defeating an incumbent. So I think those debates are very important.
Do you agree, David, that these debates will kind of set the tone of what the campaign's going to be like for the rest of the year before we get the November election?
Well, it's sort of a tautology. Debates are really important to set the tone for the campaign, except when they don't. I think the debates could set the tone. You're going to have all the candidates are going to have their own strategy. It'll depend on how they respond, if the attacks land, or if Mike Rounds manages to deflect the attacks, whether he swings back. But I think it's a combination of debates and the TV ad campaign that's going to determine this. We're still waiting for campaigns to go negative, to launch attack ads, and a 100,000 barrage of attack ads in South Dakota TV could have a really big effect, as could a killer debate performance. It's worth noting that the Dakota Fest and South Dakota Fair debates generally don't get quite as much attention as the televised debates. A lot more sort of media newspaper attention rather than people being able to watch it live on TV, despite some live streaming that our paper and others will do. So it's going to be an interesting situation.
Denise, are there certain debates coming up next week that you're particularly anticipating?
Well, I'm watching the Senate race, quite frankly. There have been a couple of polls that have showed Mike Rounds below 50%. And that whether or not that's significant depends on your point of view, I think. If there's four candidates in the race, if there were two, that would be a kind of undisputable problem for him. But to see how he handles it, to see how Rick Weiland, who has been on his, if you're gonna win the race that Rick Weiland is running, he's doing what he's got to, he's taking the path he's got to take, and that is going around to every town in South Dakota more than once, meeting the people, doing that intensive retail politics, which is so important in South Dakota. And so it'll be interesting to see how he sort of pivots from that campaign that he's been running for so many months now to the more traditional style of politicking with the debates and the campaign ads and that kind of thing and the rallies and stuff. So I'll be interested to watch how both Mike Rounds and Rick Weiland perform in that debate. And of course, Larry Pressler is kind of the spoiler one way or the other. He's getting 15%, I think, in the polls, and he's a favorite of a lot of longtime South Dakotans who voted for him before.
David, how about for you? Certain debates next week that you're anticipating and most likely most interested in seeing what will happen?
Well, I mean, it's the Senate race is the key thing. That's the closest of all the races, the race whose result is most up in the air. The governor's race and the House race appear to be more safer races for the Republicans, although if that's going to change, these debates are going to be where that starts.
Is there anything in particular, Denise, that that you'd like to hear from some of the other candidates in the other debates, the gubernatorial and the U.S. House, which is a race that hasn't been getting a lot of attention?
The Democratic candidate Corina Robinson has had a significant staff turnover, multiple staff turnovers, which is a sign of trouble for any campaign. And if you talk to Democrats who are usually the loyal soldiers, they have kind of thrown up their hands. So I'm not sure what's going on internally there. But I don't think we've heard much from the candidate herself. I haven't seen public appearances by her, TV ads. So this may be the first time a whole lot of South Dakotans actually hear from her and get to evaluate her themselves. So that'll be an interesting situation for that reason. And then the governor's race, Democrat Susan Wismer has been very vocal, very focused in her message. She, of course, has experience in the state legislature, which helps tremendously if you understand, you know, what happens in that capital in Pierre. I think she'll be, trying to box Dennis Dugard into answering certain questions and getting him on the record on certain issues. And, of course, Dennis Dugard's style is so friendly and open and gregarious. It will be an interesting contrast, I think, to see how those two kind of square off against each other.
David, what would you like to see in those other two debates, or what are you looking for? What do you think?
I'm looking forward to seeing Mike Myers debate myself. Dennis Dugard and Susan Wismer are both pretty introverted, wonky, number-focused people, and Mike Myers is a wild card. He's eccentric, outgoing, goes off on tangents. Putting him next to those two, I think. The Senate debate may end up being more consequential, but the governor's debate could be a lot more fun to watch.
Well, finally, David, in this Sunday's Argus Theater, you had an article about Yoak Barlin, who's become the focal point of the EB-5 controversy. Interesting, because we haven't really heard anything from him, or haven't heard anything at all. In writing that piece, did you come up with any further understanding or anything new about the EB-5 program and what happened in South Dakota?
No, and that wasn't really the point. We've investigated the EB-5 and what happened there plenty. What I was trying to do was shed some light on one of the players in all this, his name pops up in every single story that people write. There's fights over whether to subpoena him, but nobody knows much about him. And I was just trying to answer that question, looking through his own words and what acquaintances said about him, to try to build a picture of this guy who's at the center of this whole thing, despite being fairly reclusive lately.
Where are things at with any investigations into the EB-5 controversy? There's still federal investigations going on, or is it just we don't know?
The state criminal investigation is closed. The state legislative investigation is still open, but they have passed on taking several more aggressive steps to look into Bolin and SDRC Inc. And some other related areas. The federal investigation we don't know about. We know that there was one at one point that could be still going on. It could be that it has concluded with no charges. There was a federal grand jury at one point. It's possible that that's still going on, and we could be getting charges sometime soon, or possible that they concluded that there's just no criminality there, or that the only criminality they found was that by Richard Benda, who is, of course, no longer able to be charged.
Well, Denise, and again, the EB-5 controversy, with a few months left to go in the campaign, which is just more or less getting started, those debates next week that we're talking about, do you see this having any impact at all on either the U.S. Senate or governor's races?
Well, it would be, I think it would be more in the U.S. Senate race, because Mike Rounds was governor when this all happened. I just don't know. I mean, the Democrats are certainly pushing this. If you get their emails, they're really pushing this issue hard. There's been a number of editorials after the last legislative committee meeting on this issue, kind of criticizing the legislature for not going after more information. I don't have a good sense of how that's resonating with your rank-and-file voter, if they even are aware of this issue, if they even understand it. It's hard to understand. David can, I'm sure, attest. I spent a number of hours reading through documents, sorting out the various issues. It's a complex, layered situation that involves a federal immigration program, economic development from the state, different financial arrangements that have been made on any of these individual projects. So it's complicated, and I don't know if the message has been able to be boiled down to a way that the average person can kind of understand it quickly.
And David, for you, do you have any sense from the stories published in the Argus Leader in your stories that people are interested in following what's going on?
I don't think this story has yet hit that critical mass of resonance among the general public. I think it is confusing. It's complicated. I think you've got some sensational aspects to it. Former cabinet secretary turned up dead, potential embezzlement and theft, but just from looking at our metrics, how many people are reading stories, what people are talking about, it hasn't gone crossed over, I think, into the general public, which is not to say that it won't yet. Certainly, I think there's federal charges that can make a big difference. But it's gotten a fair amount of attention, but it hasn't gone, it hasn't consumed the our readers in the way that some more accessible stories have.
All right. Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. David, thanks for your time. And Denise, thanks for joining the program as well.
Thank you, Carl.
Denise Ross is web editor of the Mitchell Daily Republic. She joined us from Rapid City. David Montgomery is political reporter for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, where he also writes the Political Smokeout blog. And the Dakota Political Junkies are a regular Wednesday feature of Dakota Midday.